Hey, DC fans, it's Gary from Burton's Comics. I just want to let you know that Burton's Comics is open and ready to serve you in Hamilton, Ontario, down 725 Barton Street East. Come in for some deals on the weekend. Thanks.
Wackier than an animaniac. More stoned and opinionated than your average nerd.
Holy shit! Up in the sky! Look! It's a bird!
It's a plane.
It's season two of the DC animated creature features that feature creatures that happen to go all about their opinions on these features. And I welcome you all back, myself as well as my cohort. You know, the hetero life made the two-time commentator of the year. I am the Mize, everyone's favorite fright furball, the fluff lufflegus himself. I am here, of course, with...
I am the aforementioned two-time Courage Pro Wrestling's commentator of the year. Got that t-shirt for sale right now on whatamaneuver.net. I am, of course, your friend and my own because I'm a little bit of a psychopath that way. I am Clowny J, and we are joined by...
The little one.
No fanciness
for... No, I'm not fancy today. Ooh. I'm not in a good mood.
This is true. There was some bad news, but we won't talk about that. We will keep things on the light and the airy and the fun here tonight as we talk about a relatively new release for DC. It is the Superman Man of Tomorrow, which kicks off a brand new continuity in the DC animated universe. I'm looking forward to this one. How about yourself, Mize?
So far, it's looking really well. Going over this movie and then going back once again to review it, again, it was a lot of fun. The new animation style is certainly intriguing as well. I would definitely recommend giving this a good watch after. If you haven't already, well, definitely, you know, we'll still be here when you get back. Go have a watch for yourself and see whether or not you agree with the notes and all that.
Now, for those that could be joining us for the first time, this is a season 2, episode 0, so it is a great jumping off point for new and old listeners alike. If you haven't already, like, share, subscribe, get us out there. We appreciate each and every one of y'all. Shoot any one of the three of us a message on Twitter. Tell us you listen to the show, and we'll make sure you get a shout out on here during season 2.
But Jay, where will they be able to find us?
Well, of course, all of our Twitter handles are in the description of the show, but you can find Shauna at...
Six Space Hair.
On Twitter. I'm, of course, Clowny J. That's K-L-O-W-N-Y, letter J. And, of course, there's always...
I'm just Mize1987, because I gather there were 1,986 before me. I just happen to be the coolest one right now.
There we go. So, going into the week, we don't have a lot in the terms of DC news. They are keeping everything on the quiet, on the hush-hush, as it were, going into part two of DC Fandom, where, of course, we're going to get a lot more from animated universe panels, televised universe panels. So that'll be a big news week for us. They also announced that Batman Day will be September 19th. So on that week, we've already discussed it. We will be releasing the Batman Year One review on the 19th to celebrate Batman Day.
Hey, it's a pretty good way to start things off, and especially coming so close into October, where we can go over other various Batman titles to really hype ourselves up and spook ourselves out for the oncoming Death of the Family that month.
The other big news, of course, is lead star of Matt Reeves' The Batman, which is currently in production. Robert Pattinson has unfortunately contracted the ongoing global bastard that is COVID-19. We do, of course, wish him all the best and a quick, speedy recovery. If it can happen to people like him and The Rock, it can happen to fucking anyone. So make sure you're washing your hands, wearing your mask, being socially distant and responsible. Anyone got anything to add on that?
That's pretty much my standpoint on there. You know, it's good advice. They're great guidelines. But in most cases, they are rules for good reason. So the more we all happen to abide by them, the more we happen to, you know, beat this thing, and we'll eventually conquer it in no time, and everything will go right back to as it were.
Plus, we're superhero fans. I mean, wearing a mask out in public and being told it's okay, it's fun as hell. I've got one that looks like a clown walking into a comic book shop feeling like the fucking Joker.
Honestly, I think it would be a fantastic idea to, you know, as opposed to constantly rely on sweaters, actually, you know, get the fabric necessary or even the kind of covering necessary just to have like a cape or a cloak of some kind. So that way when you wear that with your mask, it really sets in that like Batman tone and you can do that like cool, fancy, slow motion Batman walk that he does with his like cape drawn over him and everything like that. It looks super intense.
Oh, every day can be Mortal Kombat if you've got the right mask.
Super Panda. With my panda mask, I could be Super Panda. Cape, panda mask.
I'm going to expect pictures of this.
So okay. You mean to tell me this whole time, you have been a panda with superpowers. You're half panda, and you have super... What are your superpowers?
What are my superpowers?
Can you see through wood?
No.
Can you divide by ducks?
No. But I can eat my green beans.
And not have to give them to Max.
I'll need photographic evidence of such lies and everything like that. We are currently on the verge of Skrulls and a possible invasion from the Kotalia of Skrulls. So being all shape-shifting and all that, if you're half a panda, find out.
Well, on that note, let's move over into a quick collector's corner. This week alone, online, they'll be coming by the end of the month. I've ordered the Murder Machine and the Black Adam glow-in-the-dark Funkos. So I'm looking forward to those. Also, I was able to find the Ra's al Ghul, the Cheetah from Wonder Woman 84. I got her in complete Cheetah variant instead of going for the Barbara Minerva. And I got the Tommy Lee Jones Two-Face. You know, I needed a Two-Face. I think that Two-Face is, you know, people have their varying opinions on those films, but you do what you can. Like many others, I would have rather it been Billy Dee Williams in the role.
I'm just going to come out with the science of the matter. I've tended to many formulas and calculations and run through many beeps and boops and zips and zaps. But the same result has come back all the same. Batman Forever is, in fact, the greatest Batman movie of all time.
Well, you heard him there, Dark Knight Heath Ledger Joker fans. Hit him up at Mize1987. At him, don't at me.
Hey, my Joker's deadlier than yours. Thanks, Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey was the Riddler, not the Joker.
Yeah, I know. But you see how he acted in that. There was by no means any sign of Riddler in Jim Carrey at all. He was just the Joker wearing question marks.
True.
Look at how he behaved. He may have not have taken a dip in Ace Chemicals at all, but he had the exact same change in mannerisms, plotting, and just tacky scheming. And it turned out so well for the villain side, all the better for the hero to overcome the odds as usual in a superhero movie. So that's what made it so entertaining for me, was that I envisioned it more as a Joker feel. You know, at that time, I had just gotten into the 90s Batman cartoon, as well as paid attention to a little bit of the 60s one, like just seeing a live action old guy play the Joker and everything. I didn't pay no mind to the mustache thing going on, just his golden age wacky
mustache.
I was just baffled by colors, you know. If it was colored by mustache, I'd probably have a keen eye for it. But I got like just a great image at that time, and it was also colorful for me at that point. And that's another thing that really emphasizes my favor of Batman Forever, because it's so colorful, like the Batman like outlets that I've been watching or reading about beforehand. Probably a lot different than other people's standards, especially an older generation, having at that time come across to see like a dark silver age, like the entering of the silver age for the Batman at that time. And that part I wish I'd read into when I was young, because it was super hype.
Well, with that, actually, speaking of Two-Face, a film I can't wait to review on this show is the Batman story of Two-Face Batman 66 Animated Adventure.
Oh, those titles would be... I would love to review those both, like, just in general. Like, they are great. They are great tales of an older style Batman brought into an animated fashion. So, like I was making mention of earlier, how I really enjoyed the colorful emphasis on those outlets. Pretty much both of those mashing together to create just, like, a lot like going to see a 3D movie for the first time ever in your life, and you're just still baffled and amazed by the advancement of technology. And it was so overwhelming for such, again, like a tacky outlet. It was a lot of fun.
Well, then, what do you say, you know, next week we're doing the Deathstroke film that came out. The week after, we're doing Batman Year One for Batman Day. That leaves us with a week after that. What do you say we do the Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders?
Yes.
I wouldn't see why not. You know, it's a great way to introduce said villains that everybody should know about at this point in age. Anybody from the Joker to Killer Croc, even the Ventriloquist, the likes of those guys are just fantastic. But, you know, again, a more tackier touch, and you get to see, like, the really popular ones take their play in this. It's a lot to take in.
And with that, that'll actually bring us over into, hell, why don't we get into what we're reading, because it all stays on topic. I got myself a shit ton of Batman 66 books. I was able to pick up the crossover with Steed, which I believe was a British television series. We were able to get the Batman 66 Wonder Woman 77 crossover book.
I can't wait to finish it.
Another one of the Batman... There was another Batman 66 book we got. There was three in the title, in total. Plus, I was able to find another one that I had in just my folks' garage. So that leaves only three more volumes until I've got the entire set.
That's pretty good, man. It's a short ways away, and I can only imagine how much of an entertaining read those are. There's a few to look through there, but aside from that, though, what else have you picked up in regards to books?
Well, I picked up the Dark Knight Death Metal. Lost Episodes, Batman 66, Sean is saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Dark Knight's Legends, issue number one.
Oh, you got that one.
I did. The first run printing as well.
Fantastic.
You know, highly sought after book. I was able to get Gary to put, Gary over at Burden's Comics to put one away for me when it first came out. And he just kind of stashed it there for me.
Oh, that's outstanding. So you must have gotten a good read out of that one. Like, I certainly have my favorite among the various Batman that were spoken of in that book.
Yeah, it was kind of cool seeing some of the different variants, like the Bat Freeze and Bat Bane variants at one point, the Court of Bats.
And then there was the Batman who murdered his own son to have his spirit become one with the city. So Bruce Wayne was literally Gotham City. He possessed the entire town. So it was just one spiritually possessed landmark. Okay.
And of course, there is the story in there that made this such a sought-after issue. The origins of the Robin King.
That one had to have been my absolute favorite. Absolute favorite.
Now, as cool as it is, I'm still kind of not sure on it. Because, A, why would he choose Robin King? He had no association with Robins at the time.
It was just how he was introduced into being the Robin King. So at the time you saw him in that point of origin, he had already met with the Batman Who Laughs in that few hour span. Like, it was like 4 to 6 hours or something like that. He had met with the Batman Who Laughs, and he donned the new persona given to him for a higher purpose. He knew full well of this Bruce Wayne's existence, and knew full well that he was nothing but a harm, an absolute wretch, and a killing machine overall, it turns out. So he took advantage to that, and when he brought him into the main arc of the Dark Knight's Death Metal, his... presence, even unintroduced in the first place, was so overwhelming. I was just so jazzed to see that Robin actually had like a leader of some kind amongst the colony, or if it was just because of brutality alone. And lo and behold, it wasn't any actual Robin, but it was still fucking Bruce Wayne. And it just blows my mind, because they're taking a Bruce Wayne at such a young age and they're throwing him into this multiversal death trap of absolute like kamikaze annihilation. So his introduction there, being able to read it, the death metal stuff from both perspectives, really cinched in, and it made a whole lot of sense, and it was the most impactful story.
Aside from that, the other book that we picked up was, we got the DC Unkillables trade paperback.
I remember.
Or hardcover, sorry.
Oh, I remember getting that issue for issue, and it was it's a fantastic read. Haven't read through it yet?
I have. Of course, we know someone else that's had issues with the deceased line and conversations with Tom Taylor.
He's a liar, man.
I'm not going to lie to you whatsoever. You thought it was bad the first time? Go ahead and open the book. I dare you.
That man lied to me. He told me it was going to be okay. I'll be fine.
Well, the book's going to be okay. Your point of view and perspective to seeing what happens, that, however, I cannot promise a damn thing. That's going to shatter.
Yeah, she has seen some spoilers as I was reading through, because she asked for them. That way she wasn't totally... however, we're not sure how many... We're not sure how many of the spoilers she'll remember when she gets to reading the book. Because, let's face it, we smoke a lot of marijuana.
We drink a lot.
We do drink quite a bit, yeah.
I would say it's not, like, you know, if you want to read something when you have your first coffee of the day, don't do that with this book.
See, what happens is I like to read at nighttime.
When I go to bed?
When he goes to bed.
Okay, that'll be a little better then, because you would get so angry at this, you would try and stab coffee. Not even at the mug, you would just try to stab the coffee itself. That is how angry this story will make you.
Okay.
But it is so well written. The last one
made me cry, and I was all night by myself. I'm like, that's not cool, yo.
Bro, I fucking, like, just completely got all emotional all over every single arc of the deceased, like, writing. Everything from the OG arc to the, of course, Unkillables, and even the online stuff and the stuff I'm reading right now. They've done so much in such a little amount of time with this, and you get so emotionally connected with each arc. It's, like, one of the coolest things they've done since Blackest Night. And it's, it seems to always revolve around utilizing the dead or undead or something like that.
See, that's something that I think DC did better than Marvel with the Marvel Zombies, is in this pocket universe... they're able to establish a deeper emotional connection with the characters before ripping them away from you.
Yeah. Like, I liked the Marvel Zombies, but this is just, wow.
So, if you had to say, like, what was the highest point for you in Marvel Zombies itself? Like, what moment really spoke to you most when you read it?
See, that's the thing. You don't really... there's no real story points that stand out to you, just kind of cool artwork.
The best part about Ash versus Marvel Zombies, Ash versus Evil Dead versus Marvel Zombies, is that it gives us a point of origin of how it started, what brought it to that specific reality, and how it's progressing in alternative settings as well. And it kind of...
See, I didn't get into all the spin-off books.
Oh, man, yeah. you got to read the one with the Evil Dead stuff in it. It is just so proper how it all fits in. You get the most hilarious bits of violent artwork, and you get the coolest little stints and recreational storytelling. It's a super cool title to check out, and it really helps explain how, you know, as one man's actions can just obliterate a multiverse.
Well, see, Deceased is doing all that without the stunt casting... of bringing in an outside property.
See, that's what makes it so much better than Marvel Zombies in this day and age, is because they don't have to do that, and they're solely relying on the fact that they have an entire multiverse to play with.
Speaking of playing in the multiverse, I know it's not DC directly, however, it does parody a lot of DC characters. I know Little One and I watched the first three episodes, but Mize, you've only watched the first one. And that, of course, we are talking about Amazon Prime's The Boys.
If you thought you knew true comedy, then you've never seen Mark Cuban in a jogging suit. Oh, what a hilarious sight to see, but it was still a sight to behold, in at the very least, the first episode of it. I've had a whole lot of fun with it. I'm hoping that specific characters get a necessary push for this coming season's episodes.
Oh, you're going to like it.
I'm just going to have a hell of a time sitting there watching it. The first season blew my mind. I certainly cannot wait to see what else they have to unravel for us, if they'll even progress more seasons from this point as well.
Well, they have announced the season three already. No, the thing I want to talk about is kind of like the parody. The comics, of course, deviate differently than the television show does.
Yeah.
However, there's more of a parody aspect of known properties.
Yeah.
You know, Black Noir is obviously a Batman / Black Panther type character.
He could also be a Snake Eyes-like character. He could be a generic, just Black Ops style character.
Right. You know, we got the Homelander, Superman, Queen Maeve, Wonder Woman. A big debate beforehand was who Starlight was supposed to be a semi-parody of. And I believe with the introduction of Stormfront this season, that they're both parodying the same person. I think it's a Mary Marvel Black Mary duality with those two characters. Oh,
That's a hot take there. You know what? That's I like the.
I want you to watch the next two episodes and keep that in mind, especially the way these two characters interact with and about each other.
The third episode, they really have this.
It was during the third episode that this came to my mind that they're Mary Marvel and Black Mary. They're two sides of the same coin.
Now, have any of y'all read anything in regards to the countdown to New 52 before, like, Final Crisis and everything? You'll know that Mary Marvel was really, like, you know, it was just kind of an unexpected twist how important she actually was in regards to the likes of Saving the Multiverse, you know, going toe-to-toe and standing by Darkseid, and just her overall shift in attitude and power fluctuations, and it's just a complicated duress of growing up with superpowers when it comes to the Marvel family. So definitely read about her then, but even still, if I happen to notice any personality quirks or traits in regards to the representation of Stormfront and Citizen Starlight in the coming episodes of this season, then yeah, absolutely. I'm totally down to believe that. Like, I'm already down to believe that.
And, you know, we were mentioning, you mentioned how important she was in the countdown. The actress for Mary Marvel in the Shazam films had a five picture deal.
Interesting.
With a trilogy of Shazam movies, could we see Black Mary appear in live action?
It's hard to say right now because they have such a heavy focus on the new setting of the Marvel family as given to us recently in the cinematic universe. So
I can't wait for the second one.
Absolutely. I can't wait to see what everybody has in store for us, what kind of fight that's going to be brought to them, and how they're going to overcome these odds as kids in superpowered adult bodies. So it's certainly going to be a funny one at the very least. I mean, the first one kept me captivated both humorously and seriously throughout the entirety of it. So this is, like you said, just an exciting thing to look forward to.
With that, that's all I've got on my mind, DC news or otherwise. Mize, you got anything else for us before we get into a commercial break in the review?
You made mention earlier on about Marvel Zombies. I did, in fact, start the Resurrection series with the first issue there. It's got a very interesting take on a new team of survivors. And a couple of them names you don't really come across too often nowadays, but still moderately memorable members of the Marvel Comics roster. So definitely go to your local comic shop, or if you're in Hamilton, Ontario, head down to the old 725, grab your copy from Gary, and give it a read, give it a shot.
I certainly enjoyed it. I can almost guarantee that you will, especially if you happen to be a fan of Marvel Zombies and Deceased. Aside from that, I'm just reading the usual stuff. The Empires, like, the titles are coming out faster than I can read them, quite frankly, because I'm, you know, all indulged in playtesting with various friends of mine for, you know, local Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments that have opened back up. As it stands, though, that's pretty much it for me. I didn't really get anything DC-related, like, collector-wise, but they were Hot Topic exclusive, like, anime Funkos. I was pretty happy about it.
You did get the Devastator last week.
Oh, I did get the Devastator last week, for those of you that don't know about it. The season one finale ended with Clowny and Lil' One here gifting upon me a copy of the Devastator Funko. So now he sits proudly with a bunch of my other Batman fellows and looking to clear up the Dark Knight set, you know, relatively soon. I only got a couple more to go with that. But aside from that, that's a... pretty much it news-wise. It's unfortunate to see, like, nothing huge is, like, outstanding or popping out as of late that we haven't made mention of already.
Oh, I do have one more piece of news. You did mention Gary's. We do got to mention that, you know, I forget how much it is to get the slip for the contest.
Oh, every $20 you spend at Gary's, he takes your name down, and I believe it's every biweekly period on the Wednesday, he draws a name from there, and if you happen to get your name drawn, you know, next time you're in, just give a peer up on the wall there, hanging there with all the fantastic stuff Gary has available for us, collectibles, comics, toys, card games, otherwise, you might see your name with a prize hook to it, and who doesn't love free merch every now and again, especially when you're in there picking up your weeklies, picking up your trades, or just popping in to say hi to Gary and Bobby, you know?
Well, not only that, this week, if you pop in, you look up on the wall, you will see the name of the Mize, as Gary DM'd me earlier to let me know that Mize won this week.
Holy crap. That is fucking something right there, ladies and gentlemen. That is just awesome luck at that at its finest. I'm super stoked for that. I'm definitely going to be heading down there in the following day, I imagine, at the very least, so that way I could swing down, say hi to Gary, you know, pick up some more junk, and grab myself... you know, that prize he's got pulled out for me. That's awesome.
Get to boo Bobby Snoot.
Well, I certainly hope so. I've gone in there, and Bobby is just the most adorable little fella, and he just keeps freaking out at me. I think it's because of the hair. Might be because of the hair, or even the mask, whatever the case is. He certainly is a vocal one. He likes to say hi, too. So while you're in there, say hi to Bobby, too.
So yeah, Mize won this week. Gary does have great weekend deals going on right now. He's got some, you know, tax-free if you pay for a certain book that he's got one copy of in all toonies. Gary's weekend deals are always something awesome. So keep your eye on Gary's on Burden's Comics Twitter, Burden's Comics on Facebook, and make sure you're Instagram as well. Make sure you're keeping your eyes on there. Pop in, grab your books. And look just to the right of the register on that wood pole. You'll see a Clowny J sticker.
Oh, snap. You can get yours. You can also get yours from going to What a Maneuver, getting your copy of one of Jay's t-shirts, getting it on a hoodie, getting it on a long sleeve crew neck, whatever you're fancy, you know, and get one of those on there, get a personalized thank you note and a sticker as well. What's there to lose, you know? More great stuff.
I've already been getting tweets of people, their shirts have been coming in, so.
Our shirts came in yesterday.
Yeah, our shirts are at home. They'll be there when we get back. Look for pictures of that. But people have been sending me pictures of them in their Clowny J t-shirt.
That's fantastic, man. All the more means to draw everybody in. All their friends are going to scope out the cool art of the two-time commentator of the year. And they're going to want to pick up their gear, you know?
Well, with that in mind, I've got a bowl packed here in front of me. So what do you say we cut to commercial break? We'll all have a quick bathroom break, have a bowl, and then we'll be right back with our review of Superman, the Man of Tomorrow.
Patrick Stewart!
Do you want your ad here? Contact @ClownyJ or Mize1987 and DM them, letting them know you want to advertise on the DC Creature Features. All right, and we are back, and it is now time for our review of Superman, Man of Tomorrow. You know, we get the classic, the now classic DC opening. A little bit of a new musical undertone for it as well, picking up this new film. But the first thing we see is a couple of young children watching an alien movie. And the first thing I notice before the movie even kicks off, Mize, in this black and white film, before the alien reveals himself to be an alien, he takes off his glasses first before revealing his true alien self in this black and white movie they're watching. Which I thought was a great metaphor for Clark Kent taking off the glasses before becoming Superman.
Yeah, you know, I never actually looked at it like that to begin with. And it's good that you brought it up now, though. It's so relative and so accurate to, like, just the overall reference it's making and the relativity to the actual movie itself. So even for Super Alien, as Clark Kent is, there's still some relativity, some humanity in that segment.
Now, of course, this alien movie does freak Clark out more than who we figure out through association is a young Pete Ross.
That's what it is.
Yeah, the mother in the credits is listed as Mrs. Ross. So, by association, the young son would be Pete Ross.
I didn't assume so at first. And as you said, the name popped up in the credits, and that got me wondering. And so I'm like, okay, that's a good assumption to make, and I'm glad I got on board with it.
But he is too scared to sleep over realizing that this alien could represent how humanity would view him, and decides, you know what, I'd just rather go home.
Yeah, it could have been a homesick thing because, you know, Clark's grown up only knowing John and Martha. So being out, it's something so exciting. It could even be something as basic as, you know, being easily scared as a child. But you got to expect more when it comes to someone who was an infant when their planet was destroyed and then showing up on another one and having to adjust to their standards, their way of living. The culture shock had to have been tremendous for a boy growing up like Clark did.
In the truck on the way home, I noticed that this Jonathan Kent is a little more Snyder-verse-y. He seems less heartfelt and more cold.
Yeah. It's good that you brought that up because I put that exact description of how Jonathan Kent was starting to come off as very, very skeptic in the early period as they were looking after Clark and, you know, being as patient as they have been. And, you know, of course, everybody's bound to get tired once in a while. So perhaps it's just Jonathan showing some weakness, you know, just as a human.
Well, it's in this kitchen scene after where Martha and Jonathan are kind of the angel and demons on his shoulders, telling him the good and the bad about revealing himself to the world, where he's playing with a little triangular, what I wrote down as a codex.
It certainly seemed that way, because they've been trying for years just to kind of goof around with it, play with it, and nothing's happened, and it's just so peculiar, you know? You would have expected, like, it just to start reacting to Clark's DNA signature.
Now, we jump to years later where Clark is all grown up, but I made a note that, go on a sidetrack here, I love the fact that they skipped his entire youth. We don't get flashbacks of it, really. We don't get a montage of him growing up in Kansas. We skip the Superboy years altogether.
I can see where they wanted to progress as fast as possible, but I do believe in what you're saying to be true as well. Because there are a multitude of the various filler stints that we could see Clark, you know, just kind of getting used to his constant improvement in his power and his just overall progression, his aging and everything like that. And he's just so powerful and doesn't know why. And then, you know, you start getting into his adult life where he starts to learn even more that he didn't even know himself or was ever made aware of when he was younger.
Yeah, we just jump right into, like, early adventures. He's already being established in the papers. So it's good that we're not treading over old ground, as so many creators and stories are one to do.
Yeah.
But we are at Star Labs now, getting ready for the launch of the new LexCorp and Star Labs joint effort to get a shuttle into space.
Absolutely. There's been like a whole lot of just overall worry and stories going around about an alleged like flying man kicking around Metropolis. The Kents and any family member would want nothing but the safest for Clark Kent. You figure that one of the first times he's invited or needed at one of these big get-togethers, one of these bigger, more serious, newsworthy ordeals, you know, nothing bad's going to happen to him, or anybody for that matter. Nothing ever works that way in the DC Universe.
This is also where we're introduced to Lex Luthor for the first time in the film.
Absolutely. And one thing that is really key about introducing Lex Luthor at this point in time is that, unlike other renditions, this Lex Luthor happens to be probably the most prominent and the most advanced kind of Lex Luthor. For each Lex Luthor always has their power suits, their kryptonite armors, their just overall powerful intergalactic-based weapons, their nanotechnology. This Lex Luthor came equipped with the most powerful weapon of all, the best power move of all, and that is the LexCorp logo fucking tie clip. So there is an image representing Lex Luthor on the tie of Lex Luthor being worn by Lex Luthor. And if that's not enough Lex Luthor, then I just don't know what is. That just makes that the greatest Lex Luthor power move of all time.
See, I thought you were going to say the biggest Lex Luthor power move was having the same voice as Siler from Heroes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Zachary Quinto plays a fantastic Lex Luthor in this movie, and there's going to be more to come involving the action and the inclusion of Lex Luthor.
But it's here where we see, right now in his career, Clark is little more than the coffee errand boy for all the different news people. And we also learned that I take my coffee the same way Superman does. Little bit of cinnamon in the grinds before brewing really wakes it up.
I made that phone this morning.
And it turns out to be a pretty popular thing. And so...
If you're a coffee drinker, and you don't put a little scoop of cinnamon on your coffee grinds before brewing it, you are missing out. Don't put it in after, because you get that little bit of a film on it. Put it in before. Put it on the grinds before you run the water through. Do that tomorrow morning, and you will thank me.
Or sometimes you can mix it, like, in with the grinds. Sometimes I do that.
Yeah, spin it one way or another, put it in with the grinds before you run the water.
Well, it seems pretty prominent, and it sounds just fantastic to do. I can't wait to try it myself at some point. But as it would stand, though, it certainly works out for those who Clark is handing the coffee out to, as we get introduced to Mr. Troop at this time, you know. He's an intriguing character. I've never been really familiar with this fella.
And it's also here that we're introduced to a hungry young reporter of a Miss Lois Lane. Ashana's got a note on Lois Lane. I think she's got the same one that I wrote down.
Yeah. If anyone noticed, the Lois Lane, it looks exactly like Jane from Daria. The but Beavis all grown up.
Yeah, the Beavis and Butthead spinoff show. Holy Daria.
Crap.
She looks just like the best friend Jane, but all grown up as an adult
this
now.
This is absolute fact. Like, I've been trying to pin that somewhere beforehand. I'm like, this isn't the Lois Lane. That Lois Lane always had that long hair thing going on. What is going on with this here? And I have been trying to think for the life of me what the girl's name was from Daria. I wanted to look it up, but I just didn't think anything of it. So I just let it go for the time being. And I figured that it might come to me eventually when it was mentioned, like on the side or something. And just, well, look it now. Like, this is the perfect. Absolutely perfect. I'm finding out just as you're finding out. I love being able to discover new things, even when we cover things we should already know about, and, you know, these things just pop out at us. I'm super stoked.
Also on that, let's talk about the animation real quick. I thought it had a very Archer-esque vibe to it.
Same here.
In a sense, but still in a more 2D fashion. A new school style of complex animation. And it gives us a great visual representation, modern as well as memorable, of each of the characters included in this movie. Again, everybody from like Lois Lane, of course, to the likes of other villains that will be mentioned so far that I don't want to spoil the fun just yet, and other, you know, just kind of obscure characters that happen to get the spotlight as well. And that's exactly her. She showed me a picture of Jane, and it's exactly that. She even wears that funny-ass hat sometimes. And
yep.
Man, it's just fantastic stuff.
We definitely got a pop when it came to our head last night. But it's also here that, you know, Mike's talking about we're meeting new people, and we see a janitor with the tag R. Jones on it. And my first thought is, what is with people named R. Jones being around rocket launches and new and testing sites?
We will, at the very least, get to know a little bit more about Mr. Jones along the way. He is a pretty prominent character as the story progresses. And speaking of progressing stories, Lois, aside from being a journalism scholarship top earner there, she happens to be quite the snoop as she discovers some pretty scandalous government contract information regarding the manufacturing of the rocket they're presenting today.
Yeah, used a what Lex looked at was a almost a date to get information out of him on a running cell phone. I guess whatever state Metropolis is in is not a two-party consent from recording state, because Lois was able to get some damning evidence that she plays for the rest of the media right there at the press conference.
Leaving so many more questions to then be answered at that point in time. And that, which, of course, they are immediately crawling up their asses trying to get more information out of this. And it's clear there's going to be nowhere to run for Lex Luthor should things go awry.
No, it's also during the scene where we're introduced to another character, not even by name, but only on sight. Did you notice that Mercy the bodyguard was with him?
Yeah, I did. And she was absolutely bad. She crushed a phone with her hand.
It's after this that, you know, they do still go through with the launch. You know, rocket's got a rocket. And, of course, things do not go as well as they had hoped.
No, they had plans not just for the rocket, but for, you know, even if people were to die and everything, and if not for that damning evidence, then the whole thing would have been just played off as an accident, and nobody would be in trouble, but still providing ample opportunity for Luthor's schemes. In which case, once again, Lois being the crackerjack she is, she totally foiled that with damning evidence, of course, betrayed her.
This is when the flying man makes his appearance and is able to save the rocket from a catastrophic fate.
Absolutely, and it's caught quite a few eyes.
Not only that, but once he was able to get it up out of Earth's atmosphere, he felt the glowing energy of the unbridled sunlight for the first time, and felt it, you know, charging him up.
And it drew him in, you know. It's it not only felt like a relaxing relief to him, but he knew somehow that it just came to him. Like, it's not like he, you know, knew. It wasn't like he was informed, but it just felt right, kind of knows, right? So he, of course, once again was drawn to it, like a fly with bright light.
From there, we are cut abruptly back down to Earth with, I know this line made Mize pop, when all you hear is Great Caesar's Ghosts.
Yeah. I was stoked. Seeing Perry portrayed as he is, he looks fantastic, he sounds fantastic. And I was super excited for his ruthless aggression in the office.
And ruthless aggression he does have is he is holding court in the middle of the bullpen before introducing their new reporter, Miss Lois Lane.
Absolutely. He just completely outs and calls for everybody to come along there, you know. Doesn't want to make a huge deal out of it, but what the hell, right? And people just don't care.
No, and it's also here where Lois first coins the term of Superman, as she's got it written on her notes.
Oh, yeah. Clark happened to follow along, so that way, you know, you just find a reason to talk to her. He's fascinated by Lois Lane. Always has been right from the get-go. And, most interesting way to introduce yourself is when you're finding a nice young lady on her knees and banging the printer. Because it's clearly malfunctioned at this time. And, of course, they have just a brief social interaction there, you know. Asking Lois, what is there for after the accomplishment that, you know, that you portrayed? The amount of, you know, unnecessary evil that would have taken place is completely wiped off the board because of your hard work. But now that that's done, is where else is there to go for you? And it's a good question because, you know, as far as they know, that's the top of the bill, really. They've never been in stranger times than that, at that point in time, at least.
Well, until moments later when a UFO starts to enter Earth's atmosphere.
Oh, Lordy, it's a-coming. During this time period, Clark doesn't know about it yet, so he's just, you know, maintaining his fashion, making sure he's ready for evil as it comes, because he, for the first time, had gone out, he'd been spotted, and it's exciting to him now, and he feels good about it, so of course he's going to want to continue.
Yeah, and on Lois's notes, she had mentioned wanting to see him in a cape, so he grabs his bed sheet and starts modeling it.
Who doesn't wear a bed sheet to a cape, though, seriously?
Well, clearly the men that Clark had drawn the initial inspiration from, as seen in the printer room before, among the pictures that Lois Lane had accidentally left behind, one with the writing of Superman, Clark also looks through a secondary one, a little bit of a more dark and obscured photo of a man just, like, gliding through the night sky among the rooftops of Gotham City. So there was definitely visual sighting and proof of the existence of the Batman in Gotham.
Yeah, it'll be interesting and exciting to see how they handle the Batman mythos in this new universe. They haven't announced if the Death of the Family feature is canon with this universe.
I don't think so. I think it's in canon with the End of the Red Hood stuff, so they're going to maintain the same, like, production, like, team value, overall voice presence and all that jazz. It'll probably still be similar, if not verbatim, to the story we've been given beforehand.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what comes out to be canon as their next feature, as nothing's teased at the end of the credits.
No,
But let's get back into this.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
You know, the UFO is coming towards Earth, and, you know, we find out that it's motherfucking Lobo.
Oh, yeah, everybody down in Star Labs is scrambling, and even Rudy's trying his best to get, like, everybody evacuated and, you know, safely coordinated to get out of danger in no time, despite how much in awe that a flying motorcycle from space is just coming down to Earth out of nowhere. And of course, like you said, we're introduced to the main man, and that couldn't be more exciting. I haven't been that excited for Lobo since Brad Garrett did his voice. Oh man.
He is, of course, confronted by the flying man, where he flat out calls Clark for the first time a Kryptonian. How does Lobo know he's Kryptonian?
Well, it just so happens of some fancy information given. We get to find that out as well as Lobo's profession as we go along. He attempts rounding up his bounty, however. He just throws the chain over Clark and expects him to come quietly, even though he's the first Kryptonian that he's seen in the sky, apparently. And that doesn't end well.
No, they have themselves a nice little brouhaha.
Primarily starting with Lobo getting whipped across Metropolis. Like, throwing a chain over him was a stupid idea, and Clark's like, am I seriously being trolled right now? Like, this is absolutely ridiculous. And he tossed his salad, man. And that's when the fun definitely started.
And it's also during this fight where Lobo drops another great reference, teasing a whole nother superhero, where Lobo mentions that they're in Sector 2814.
I noticed that as well, and huge respect and anticipation to future Green Lantern projects just through that tiny little hint.
Hopefully we actually get one in this continuity, unlike last season.
Who would you want to see as the primary Green Lantern for like a solo Lantern film, if it had to be portrayed as one Lantern for the story, like for him to be the main character?
Well, we're doing origins and starting off from scratch, so you would have to do a Hal Jordan one, or you cheat it and have it Hal Jordan training John Stewart,
yeah,
and he's telling the story John of Stewart when he got his ring.
I like that. And then you get that.
And then he passes the sector of Earth onto Jon Stewart as he takes care of things on other planets.
Like a 20 to 30 minute conflict stint where it's like, you know, supervillain invasion or incursion or robbery or something like that. Something that really puts Jon Stewart to the test and they look to him for assistance when Hal's not around kind of ordeal.
Yeah, and it ties into whatever Hal Jordan's first adventure is in this continuity.
All right.
Hell, you could even bring Lobo back for this. Because it is a space adventure, have Lobo being a tying thread for many people. Maybe Lobo was the first person Hal Jordan encountered, and now he's back and he's trading Jon Stewart to get ready for him.
That would be something else, eh? Lobo ends up being framed for something, becomes an outlaw, and the Green Lanterns have to hunt him down for it, but it's a whole complicated mystery thing.
Turns out Mongol's behind the whole thing.
Space Holmes.
But it's during this fight scene where apparently he already knows that this is a weakness and he has a ring Lobo has a ring fashioned of kryptonite that's already irradiated properly by the Earth's sunlight and radiation from the explosion, and he already has it weaponized knowing that this is the Kryptonian's weakness.
You see, I was pretty baffled by that, but what really took me was that he had leech tasers. He had leeches that were tasers.
Well, he also has a compartment on his bike just for his cigars.
Yes, he does.
That's Cesar Romero level bullshit right there. He has electric eel fucking tasers.
But how does he already have so much knowledge about Kryptonian weaknesses and...
If oh, they've he's been a Kazarnian. He's amongst... It's one of the oldest alien tribes in history.
But on Earth is the only place where they're allergic to their own planet's rocks. And this is the first time he's encountered Superman.
Well, this is true.
Already knows he's a Kryptonian. Already knows his weaknesses.
Maybe he's met a Kryptonian before.
So with Clark clearly seeming so new to his role as a superhuman among humans, I don't know how Lobo couldn't have ended this so easily.
Right?
Man, that really brings to perspective, like, just how shitty a fighter Lobo is. I mean, sure, he can probably brawl, but not too well if he gets beaten up by a guy who doesn't know how to use his powers.
Oh, sorry, here's where we get our great Caesar's ghost. As Lois plans, after the big fight scene, Lois plans to expose the entire alien community, pretty much. It's here where... Yeah, sorry, my notes are extremely sloppy on this one.
Oh, well, it's not just the spot in Metropolis they happen to meet up. They happen to take their fight all the way over to Star Labs. Shit gets rather crazy, broken apart. You know, they're going into the walls, the structure, and it's easy for them to get out of there, no problem, because one guy's tossing the other out of there, and the other one's flying out of there anyway. But unfortunately, that's not the case for regular people, because unfortunately, the recently introduced Rudy Jones has been pinned under rubble below the booming thunder of the punches of the gods and everything like that. So try as he might, he's unable to get help, and he's doing what he can to get out of this situation. Superman wants to help, but he actually has the opportunity to hear him and go for it, but Lobo's having none of it and demands round three out of him. And from there, Superman's train of thought just instantly jeers away from the premise of saving Rudy Jones from the rubble he's trapped under. Apparently he just feels he's safer there and just continues fighting with Lobo, because apparently that was more important, and the guy who can fly at super speeds can't just go down there, you know, lift the rock out of the way, pull him out, and then fly him out somewhere.
You know, during this entire film, Superman and Clark Kent himself have been stalked by a man-in-black government-looking agent.
He was the guy that was standing outside of Clark's apartment earlier on, as he was trying the cape on, I believe.
That's right. And then again, he was at the satellite launch.
Absolutely. This man, you'll notice throughout the movie, has been recurringly following, if not stalking, Clark Kent. For reasons unknown, he just happens to appear in these places, and we're just starting to take notice to his presence now, especially during this time, amongst the likes of the launch, various personal locations. He's there, you know?
You know, Superman decides, I've got to go check up on my parents, making sure they're okay. You know, he's in the truck with Ma and Pa Kent, having a discussion when he feels, you know, something's not right, something's following us. Oh, man. They arrive to the farmhouse, and this agent is there waiting for him.
Absolutely. The entire place has just been made a monumental mess of. Lobo tried blowing Superman up with some matter eater grenade. The remnants all got, you know, pretty much raised. It was like a small pond, and Rudy Jones just kind of drowned under it, so it seems.
Yeah, and then Rudy escapes around this part, and he goes to a pharmacy. And did you notice that there was a bit of a social stab that they took here that I thought they should have, could have avoided? The first thing Rudy's looking for in this pharmacy when he robs it is fentanyl.
Yeah, that's absolutely huge stuff. Luckily enough, though, everyone was able to get away as they did because of a mysterious figure just so happened to jump into this mysterious figure jumped into the fight with Lobo and Superman. That's why he had to be driven away. So this mysterious figure shows up, and all of a sudden we're introduced to this green alien type figure that happens to be fighting about. If that doesn't leave their clues, I don't know what does. So at that point in time, upon the arrival back at the house of Kent with that stranger being there, it certainly puts things into perspective and starts making things more clear as to who he really is.
Yeah, and they decide to have Martian Manhunter does reveal himself. You know, they have themselves a little chase around the farm before they decide, you know, let's have some tea.
Why wouldn't you?
But back to my point about the fentanyl, that is something it's not only a problem here in Canada, but it's a problem in other places of the world right now. It's a simple, just a dialogue switch. Name it anything else. That's like, I don't know, saying the first thing that the junkie has to go for is crack back in the late 80s. It's not something that we need to have in our superhero movies. Make something up.
Yeah, it seems like there could be a much better means to go about the creation of Parasite.
But from there, you know, we learn that the Martian Manhunter at one point tried to mind link with Superman and now knows all of his repressed baby memories. So he knows Superman's dad's name. He knows he's Kryptonian. He knows how to open the fucking Codex.
Which was an absolute sight to see as from there he's offering him the help to become better knowledgeable to his capabilities and weaknesses to better serve him in the future. And to have access to this kind of information is monumental.
It's from their words. We hear that Superman does have a decision to make. Will he shield himself from the world, or will he come forth and be the beacon light of a hero? And we will find out all these answers plus more when we get back from our commercial break. Hey folks, do you like fun recipes and delicious food? Are you a health conscious person or someone who may be celiac? Well, check out the Twitter account Gluten's the Devil for fun recipes and delicious food on almost a daily basis. That's Gluten's the Devil at Twitter. All right, folks, and we are back. And, of course, we've been glossing over a lot of little points in this movie, a lot of the B-plot that involves Lois Lane as a reporter. Mize, report on that.
So Lois Lane is more than just a
Lois Lane's more than just a mild-mannered kind of lady that, you know, just so happens to report the truth. She's got a sneaky modern touch as well, as she decides to do the whole play hard to get or waste his time 2016 kind of fashion. She's really playing it rather vindictively with the Man of Steel, trying to draw him in as though he'll be easily influenced. I thought that was a pretty bold step in a showcase of the humanity's like need and pride, and at the very least, the flaunt and the skill that each person has, especially Lois Lane.
And you know, we also know that Superman will need a new suit, as his regular clothes, as he was fighting Lobo, did get completely burnt up, and he stood there just hanging, brain completely nude in front of all the reporters.
Personally, one of my more favorite Superman fight scene parts in this movie, when he exclaims that he really enjoyed doing this the fun way with Lobo, and proceeded to give him a, you know, 100% battery style knockout, and that's what ended things there, and got the Man of Steel to escape, and well, things to progress they have so far.
Which does bring us back to the Kent farm, where Ma Kent is presenting Clark with a box. Inside is an outfit that she's made out of the material, the soft blankets and interior materials from the shuttle that they found him in. She went through over 16 saw blades, cutting it and getting it ready for him.
Fashioning it to, like, near-invincible Kryptonian, like, onesie that is just, or however she put it together, is just incredible.
She also mentioned that when putting it together, she modeled it slightly off the nice Batman fellow from Gotham that she sees in the papers.
Because that's how he comes off. The Dark Knight, who breaks people's arms anytime they don't want to tell him something, is nice.
He's that nice Batman.
He's got a cape. He's got to be nice.
We cut back over to Lois, and really, if you look at it, her first article came out where it was all a big lead up to, we'll get the answers in the second article. Lois Lane's a fucking clickbait writer.
Oh, absolutely. She's 100% comic book resources. Oh. You heard it here. Lois Lane writes for comic book resources.
Well, you know she at least has spell check because she's not on comicbook.com.
Oh.
Snap. Oh, that's absolutely fantastic.
You know, but she does take her clickbait little ass over to Lobo's cell. Turns out he's being held hostage, and he's not so much as a Lobo as a Ludbo with her.
Yeah, he's cutting loose with the potty mouth poetry and pulling fast one-liners with Lois Lane. And he cares nothing for the dangers of his own cell, as he pretty much is right up there, face to panel, only the panel is made out of pure voltage, and it like just shocks the hell out of his face. And Lois is just baffled by all of the uncanniness of everything unfolding.
Yeah, it's, you know, he gets pretty graphic with her, which some of those I thought were fucking hysterical.
Absolutely, and Lois wanted nothing more than to just leave. I don't know what it is about Lois' vocabulary, but it captivates a Bastic as well as intrigues them all at the same go.
Oh, she really just wanted him to frag himself at this point.
Yeah.
But it is now time for the monster that once was Jones to break into Star Labs and the cell in particular.
Yeah, there's been a little bit of disarray going on in Star Labs as Lois conducted her interview. And, well, this mysterious figure manages to sneak on in and get all the staff KO'd. And he broke into the same area where Lois and Lobo are having their fancy chat. And, well, the guards, no matter how many are left, really stick to their guns, and I mean guns, because they start shooting away at Lobo like so many of their other co-workers have succeeded in doing so far. Trying to take a go at him, but Parasite immediately takes the go back, and it just drains the ever-loving, like, remembrance out of these guys.
Yeah, not only that, but Parasite is also instrumental in freeing Lobo as he puts his hands on the energy shield, keeping him contained, and just drains that to absolute zero.
his emotions got the better of him, and you got Rudy Jones is now the world's best portable power battery.
And that power battery is not even at 20% capacity yet.
No, and he's already tearing a Kyle-sized escape route and just ripping shit to absolute shreds to get the hell out of there.
It's definitely going to take someone more than a Kyle Smith to save the day. And luckily for Lois, Superman does come through.
And not just as the Flying Man in that recreation of his recent Simpsons shit, but, you know, he's wearing the Superman getup that his mom made for him. So he's the coolest kid at the Halloween party.
Undies on the outside and everything.
Even a little less on the belt. That's just, you know, the right kind of tacky.
Superman does take the fight elsewhere, and we get ourselves a little monorail brawl.
Absolutely. After appealing to Lois for her not to run the story about Kal-El, he wants to introduce himself to the world. He does so by making that good old college try, his first impression there. Rudy makes his way towards a train full of all these people, and Superman's like, you know, hell no, can't let this fly. And, you know, we have Jean making the scene, and he's all up and about for stopping this guy, too.
Yeah, his efforts are not for nothing. However, during this, Parasite is able to drain some energy from both Superman and Martian Manhunter, and he fucking roasts them.
Oh, yeah, he completely annihilates these guys. Like, yeah, sure, the train riders are safe, that's great and all. But the brutality between that fight between both Superman and Martian Manhunter versus Parasite was absolutely surprising, you know? You get this guy who you don't normally see taking on the A-listers like this, and he's just ripping them apart like no problem.
Oh, I'm talking literally! He grabs Martian Manhunter by both arms and uses the Superman heat vision to literally roast Jon Jones.
The weakness of the Martians that really set in a harmful tone there, especially for the psyche of one Jon Jones being the alleged last of his kind. And for, as we see it, just completely being incinerated and burning away.
You know, next morning, abrupt wake up, Superman has cut his hand on a glass that he broke because he is right now without his powers. And Lois just helps herself into his home.
Like, straight up, not even knocks, just like bang right in there.
Not even really friends at this point, so this is a complete invasion, breaking and entering.
It's already bad enough. He lost to another alien and half his powers are gone, so it's got to be even more confusing to see himself like vulnerable to such relatable accidents, I guess one could like refer to it as.
It's here that Lois is trying to pry some information out of him, maybe get him to slip up here and there, and Clark realizes that Lois is trying to snake his story.
Yeah, like, as if the first ploy with, you know, wasting Superman's time to make the planet more appealing, like, she's just doing downright dirty here. Like, this is not a Lois Lane that you would respect to be with the likes of Clark Kent.
No, it's reported that Clark was on site during this battle, and he was injured, so he does have the inside scoop on what happened, and Lois is there to try to steal it all from him.
Which is just unheard of.
She does claim, I was going to share the byline with you.
Share the byline when it's Clark with the original source. Okay.
From here, Clark does realize that there's only one person he can go to in a time like this. And he dons the Superman getup, and we get our first face-to-face confrontation between Superman and Lex Luthor.
Superman, unfortunately, does not have the capability, as we're well aware, to be able to properly utilize his powers, in which case he can't fly into space without being vulnerable to the atmosphere's susceptibilities and dangers. So, of course, the easiest way to put it is that Clark wants Lex to launch him into space. And it's completely unheard of, because it's just sheer logic that he's not an astronaut by any means. Just because he's an alien doesn't make him an astronaut. And if he's missing out on a lot of his power, then how is he going to humanely adjust right off the bat just so he can go and recharge? He's going to be launched into space, he'll be flattened, sick, possibly killed by the shock in general without the proper training.
Lex does have an idea, though, and for him to do this, it requires a day pass for him to get out of prison, which Superman is even skeptical that he can even accomplish.
But luckily enough, we don't have to rely on Superman's dependability for this matter, for Lex is highly aware as to how to go about getting a day pass, as it were.
We do check in with Mr. Jones' family now, so Parasite's family. We see his pregnant wife and already alive and growing daughter in their home. He's phasing through using Martian Manhunter's abilities.
So they can't really see him. He's just there just to kind of, you know, observe his human attachments. The family that he cherished so much that he spoke of earlier on in the movie without any context. Well, now we're being given the context as the story progresses, so it's a great way to develop a fresh character into this line of the DC animated universe. After a little stint of being invisible after they took off from the room there, he just kind of phased into normal there, you know, just to be visible. And just a brief little stint occurs. He knocks something over, and his daughter catches a sight of him, but she doesn't see her father. She sees what is the grimace-flavored interpretation of murder.
We then get to see into Lex's lab as we're walking in. There's a nice little shot that shows a bunch of different creations, including a prototype Lexo suit.
Which is pretty impressive stuff. We've had quite a few variations to look over the years, but that one is still very classic, very relatable in regards to Alexa's early days in creating such adjustments.
It's also here where we learn that Lobo is now under Lex's payroll.
Yeah, apparently you can find a lot more than you think on Craigslist.
You need a new couch that someone else slept on? Go there. You need a intergalactic bounty hunter?
Maybe you want a couple of bookends in the form of Scorpion and Sub-Zero. Or maybe you want to hire Lobo.
I guess it's better than looking on Wayfair.
They never have what I need, but luckily for me, I went on Craigslist, got a Lobo.
Not looking for any kids?
Not looking for any kids. Just Lobo.
Well, they do have a plan to fight this creature, and it's a bomb of a plan.
Oh, hell yeah. Such a booming revelation when we find out that nobody is actually there to be harmed during the making of this scheme. All because of the lucky little stint where, Lobo pulled a classic prank and called him a bomb threat. I know it's not really a classic prank, but he's Kazarnian. Everything's a classic prank to a Kazarnian.
And it turns out it's not even really a prank because Lobo has a shitload of explosives strapped to him.
Well, if a bomb attached to a threat is considered heavenly hash ice cream, then good sir, I'll settle with being lactose intolerant because that just sounds absolutely buck wild batshit crazy.
We do see where we get our new super kaiju parasite starting to attack. Now with Canary Scream action.
Oh, it's got that killer queen laser beam going on to him, and that is just fun as all hell. Parasite just starts, you know, absorbing everything, and that's what gets him so goddamn big. I don't think I've ever had so much fun seeing Parasite represented so well, so creatively.
Yeah, really, they went all Rita Repulsa on him, too, with this making the monster grow. And it's during this that Lobo decides to frag it and pushes the detonator in Parasite's hand, blowing himself up and doing sweet dick all.
Well, he's not going to get eaten by Parasite.
Yeah, Parasite's able to just absorb that energy. And we do see where the blood is starting to regather for Lobo in the water almost instantaneously. You know he's got that healing factor.
Oh, yeah. Just the fight alone between Parasite and Lobo was so cool. I never thought I'd get to see, like, just an a generic fight scene interaction between the two. But one was made giant. One uses an intergalactic motorcycle, guns, chain, you know, Ghost Rider Punisher style with a Deadpool mouth and all of that going in there. It's like the ultimate action movie in just a couple of panels. And they feel like they last forever because you just love every moment of the action between both Lobo and Parasite. It's so cool.
The Superman does start to give Parasite a bit of a go at it when Lex loads up the kryptonite cannon and he turns heel.
Oh, yeah. Superman's sole purpose during this time was just to simply distract Rudy Jones and in so cost him like a deer beating from the gargantuan monster as it stood. But speaking of things as they stood, Lex fashioning that fancy new Kryptonian gun. It's in black, always chic. And, you know, he goes full Luthor. Unless you're him, you never go full Luthor.
Yeah, by absorbing Superman's energy, it also takes his weaknesses. So the Kryptonite cannon would be an excellent choice.
Especially since Superman's initial idea was to let the Godzilla parasite absorb him. So it would increase the effectiveness of the weakness, like, damaging him.
And it is during this fight scene, after Luthor turns heel, that we get the return of the Martian Manhunter.
Which is pretty boss, just out of nowhere. Like, you expect the worst of things for John Jones when he either disappears on his own accord, or you'd think that he died or something like that, but his physiology is just so flexible that he just glues himself back together. But it was unfortunately not that graphic. It turns out it was just an illusion. It was a mind game set up by John Jones so he could escape and properly recuperate to rejoin the fight at a later time frame when he was ready.
And it's now that Parasite is making its way towards the bridge with a bunch of civilians, including Lois Lane on it. So Lois does what any responsible person would do, and she starts the live stream.
And that's alongside Mr. Troop, who, in fact, like, beforehand, they were in the planet trying to get all these information news sources. Now, Troop was on phone, like, he was on hold with the Pentagon for about 45 minutes to an hour. He was, like, 20 seconds away from getting, like, to somebody so we could speak to them in regards to the matter and possibly be on top of the situation and cause for more alert and assistance. But what does Lois do? Hangs up his phone on him while he spent almost an hour on hold, not being able to do anything else. Why is Lois like this?
Because she is one text away from getting military information from her father.
You know, given how she acts, I would probably assume that General Lane would be like, yeah, no, you're a loose cannon. You're too much. No.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what they do with the Lois Lane character and how she evolves and essentially grows up.
Hopefully she gets fucking fired at this rate. Jesus.
Well, the live stream is going down, and Superman does start to, talk to Parasite. Gives him the old Superman speech. You don't only have my weaknesses, you have my strengths as well. And that includes my heart and love for people.
His empathy really knows no bounds, as well as his patience. So, of course, the Parasites become very relatable to how Superman views the whole situation. And that it would, in turn, return Rudy Jones to a proper sense of consciousness.
It does start to work until people got a people. And some civilians start throwing Molotov cocktails at him.
Yeah, like, the beast's been calmed down, and you guys were front row for seeing them calm down the monster without having to lift a finger. And what do? You start throwing stuff at it because he breathed. What is the matter with you? Like, why would you instigate something like that? Hey, this thing's going to incinerate us, and it stands like 200 feet tall. Let's just start throwing stuff at it, you know?
Let's waste that booze instead of drinking it, being thankful we're alive right now.
I mean, I personally would be. And if they got to maybe be a little more patient, they could understand Rudy Jones a little better. Maybe even cure him and welcome him into society as a hero.
Well, it just does piss off Rudy. And now the power plant is about to go.
Oh, because I guess somebody forgot to turn it off. He was already away. Like, what is there left to do with it? Somebody should have been behind there to turn it off. And, well, all that power's been building up and ready to explode.
You know, and unfortunately, Parasite does get there first. It looks like it's going to be the end for Metropolis. However, you know, just like Icarus, Parasite flew too close to the sun, and the power from that energy plant was just too much for him, as he's fucking dust in the wind.
Yes, he turned to stone, which was really weird, but okay. He was, I'm guessing, quite still when just the sudden change in his molecular structure took place, and of course a little gust of wind just kind of crumpled and dusted everything away. And what an incredible show of valor, like last-minute humanity from Rudy Jones. Like, it's great little hints of redemption, along with the capability to get control over yourself after something so poisonous starts ravenously getting at you. It probably was a very hard battle for Rudy Jones, but being able to absorb the empathic nature from Clark Kent, he really developed strongly as a pretty decent character, both as a cool guy and a supervillain.
Speaking of those developing moments, we now get what I wrote down as the alien trio moment, as we get a nice little meeting happening between Superman, the Martian Manhunter, and Lobo.
They're all atop the Daily Planet and everything, and aside from the banter, aside from the talking about and the fancy, you know, vocabulary, Lobo reveals that the pretty much well-renowned title of The Last of when it comes to aliens is just, well...
Marketing.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Overall marketing. So this opens up the different perspectives out in outer space that there are other Kryptonians or Kryptonian-based references, just as much as there would be additional Martian life throughout the cosmos. And that leaves open a variety of things that could be touched down on in regards to this new DC animated universe. So I'm, for one, I'm pretty happy that they had this last get-together meeting with each other, just so they could kind of go through that there and really keep us guessing.
And saying Clark isn't the last Kryptonian is a nice little tease that in this universe, maybe we'll actually see Supergirl show up.
That is the big thing I'm drawing from this. One other thing I drew from it as well was that upon Lobo's farewell, a Kazarnian goodbye insists of him saying, well, I have to shit, and well, the only place I shit is at home. So I'm guessing he has a shy bladder, and Lobo flies off into the sky, not just to, you know, celebrate a good day, and not just to, you know, venture onto the next bounty, but to have a crap.
And it's also here where Superman convinces John, you know, he said you're not actually the last Martian. Why don't you go out into the universe and try to find your people? And he does.
So they both had a mutual agreement there that the humanity portion of their life was just as much of importance as the regular life. Given that this point in time, it was the life they were forced to have, but it's a good one that's given to them. So, of course, Earth will still always be home, regardless of whose planet blew up first.
And with that, that is the end of Superman Man of Tomorrow. No post-credit, no mid-credit scene.
Oh, not a whole lot in major things happening in the movie, but just a brief little bits and pieces here and there that really helped with individual character development going along there. From the little bit we had with Mercy crushing Lois's phone, and Lois being all like, motherfucker, I have a copy of this shit. Was just absolutely fantastic. Various bits of advice and just overall mentorship mentioned in the movie has been really, like, overwhelming. It's been really important to the development of Clark's character. The one where you mentioned that Jonathan Kent has, like, a Man of Steel vibe to him. He made a great point, saying the world is dangerous and unforgiving. If you're different, special, you got two options. Either meet it head on and accept the consequences, or you can keep your head down and face the consequences. There's no wrong choice, but you have to make one. And that was important, that regardless of what happens, Clark would always go with his better judgment of what was always more morally important. It was just hefty knowledge dropped down by Jonathan Kent. Like, he's a great character, an excellent role model, and a very wise man, regardless of what universe or what rendition there is of that man in general.
Yeah, I thought this was a great jumping off point for a new universe. They avoided all of the stuff that everybody knows about Superman, while still giving us an original, almost year one type story for the character.
Being able to introduce Lobo so conveniently has been long and called for, and they did it in such a great manner here. I wish he had like the full like handlebar goatee thing that he normally does, but I am not opposed to how he currently looks now. His generic style is always a welcome one, especially for a man of Lobo's caliber. And just the other character inclusions were great. I was surprised to not see Jimmy there, but I'm kind of happy they didn't. If they're doing it so like early in the years of Clark Kent, it's going to be before Jimmy gets hired. But in a lot of cases, Jimmy was there before Clark. So I don't know what route they want to take with that. But, you know, I'm behind them so far. They got a good thing going.
Well, hell, with this day and age, Jimmy Olsen could even just be a popular blogger or like a popular social media handle.
Or he could be a guy who wanders around the streets at night in the goofiest yellow helmet with the silliest trash can lid in all of Metropolis.
No, he can't.
You're right, because that was silly. Silly. You don't make Jimmy Olsen a superhero like that. Read a comic, dammit.
Also, don't make him, like, super sexy.
God, stop making side characters super sexy. Do you think I want to get an erection when I see Alfred Pennyworth on the scene? No way, Jose. But you know what? It fucking happens. He's got that Doctor Who young man kind of look to him, and he probably lifts tanks in his bare time. That man is a chiseled gentleman and knows how to throw a knuckle duster or four. So I definitely say stop sexifying your, like, support characters. It's drawing away from the main characters, and then next thing you know, I'm on DeviantArt looking up shameful things. Don't make me look up shameful things on DeviantArt. That's rude. It's rude.
Also, let's let a ginger be a ginger. Iris West, Wally West, Jimmy Olsen. Do gingers not exist in the DC live action universe?
I think they probably think a ginger is a meta. So they just take it and then take him or her, excuse me, and then they close him up in the basement vaults. That's why they have so few cells. All the other ones are filled with ginger prisoners.
Well, on that note, folks, Mize, is there anything left DC that you want to talk about this week?
I'm pretty happy with where I'm at this point in time. You know, the comics are going well. The Joker War is going fantastically. And again, same with the whole DC's Marvel Zombie thing, going awesome at this time. And just trying to keep up with Empire titles. That's probably about it, really. Aside from that, just playtesting cards, doing my thing, you know? How about you? Anything else to add for the day?
Shauna?
Nope.
No?
No.
No?
No.
Don't even want to say goodnight to the people?
No.
All right. Come on.
What a...
Well, of course, next week we will be reviewing the recently released Deathstroke film. The full title is...
Deathstroke, Knights and Dragons.
I've been calling it Demons and Dragons in my head for some reason.
Because only a devil would think it's a good idea to cast Michael Chiklis as a tall character.
With that said, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, like, share, subscribe, and we will see you at the same pod time.
On the same pod channel with Michael Chiklis.